Nikki Strong.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, known as FEMA, is responsible for preparing the United States for natural disasters. One way the agency works to be prepared is by trying to predict where disasters might happen in the future. The information FEMA gathers is calculated and put into a tool called the National Risk Index. The index takes a look at natural disasters such as earthquakes, floods, forest fires, tornadoes, and more. It also takes population and building density into consideration. Out of over 3,000 counties in the U.S., Los Angeles County in Southern California is the riskiest place to live. That is home to the city of Los Angeles. The counties in the U.S. that are home to other large U.S. cities are risky too. New York County, home to New York City, and Miami-Dade County in Florida have large populations, lots of buildings and homes, and are close to water. Cities that are close to water are generally considered risky due to flooding. Other U.S. cities that have a high risk index are Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, San Antonio, Texas, and St. Louis, Missouri. There are some places in the U.S. that are at high risk for natural disasters, but they do not rank as high on this list. For example, Oklahoma County in the state of Oklahoma has seen over 120 tornadoes since 1950. However, FEMA says it is not as risky for tornadoes as some of the counties close to New York City. That is because if a tornado were to hit near New York, it would cause more damage and affect more people than when they hit in Oklahoma. Susan Cutter is the director of the Hazards and Vulnerability Research Institute at the University of South Carolina. She worked on gathering some of the data used in the FEMA study. She explained why densely populated counties are at risk. A small tornado can create a large dollar loss, she said. Mike Grimm works for FEMA. He said one reason densely populated cities rank high on this list is because many of the residents would not be prepared for a disaster if it happened. They do not think their cities are at risk. Just because I haven't seen it in my lifetime doesn't mean it won't happen, Grimm said. The list has its critics. David Ropick wrote a book called How Risky Is It Really? Ropick said he did not think the FEMA study calculated the risk brought on by climate change well enough. He said, people do not think things that happen infrequently are risky. But when they happen, they can cause a lot of damage. He mentioned Superstorm Sandy, which flooded much of New York City in late October 2012. Himanshu Grover researches land use and planning at the University of Washington. He studies how communities develop and how they manage climate change. Grover said the FEMA tool was a good start, but he did not think it paid enough attention to the frequency of a region's storms and disasters. FEMA's Mike Grimm said the tool should help homeowners and renters and communities to be more resilient.
South Korean demand for cosmetic surgery operations sharply increased in 2020. Last year, the industry in South Korea was worth about $10.7 billion. That was an increase of around 9% from 2019. South Koreans are expected to spend around $11.8 billion this year, says Gangnam Uni, the country's largest online cosmetic surgery website. Ryu Hana is a 20-year-old university student. She got an operation on her nose in December. Ryu took her classes online throughout 2020. She said the abilities to rest at home and to wear a face covering in public were important for her. I always wanted to get a nose job. I thought it would be the best to get it now, before people start taking off masks when vaccines become available in 2021, she said as she prepared for the operation, which cost around $4,000. There will be bruises and swelling from the surgery, but since we'll all be wearing masks, I think that should help, she added. That thinking is leading to an increased demand for such operations in South Korea. Gangnam Uni data showed its users grew to about 2.6 million last year, an increase of 63% from a year earlier. However, the pandemic made it nearly impossible to sell cosmetic services to foreign patients. As a result, the industry has tried to promote its services more to people in the country and nearby. Promote means to make something more popular or well-known. Cosmetic surgeons say patients are interested in operations on all parts of the face. Some want operations on parts of the face that are easily hidden under coverings, such as the nose and lips. But others want operations in places that face coverings do not hide. Park Chol-woo is a surgeon at Wuhan Plastic Surgery Clinic. Park was responsible for Ryu's operation. Both surgical and non-surgical inquiries about eyes, eyebrows, nose bridge, and foreheads, the only visible parts, certainly increased, Park said. Surgeon Shin Song-ho runs Christmas Plastic Surgery Clinic. Shin said many people have spent their emergency payment from the government at hospitals and surgical centers. I felt like it's sort of a revenge spending. I've sensed that customers were expressing their pent-up emotions from the coronavirus by getting cosmetic procedures, Shin said. Pent-up emotions are feelings that have been held back or not expressed. Government data shows that of about $13 billion in government payments, 10.6% was used in hospitals and drugstores. That was the third largest area of spending behind supermarkets and restaurants. However, details of spending at hospitals were not provided. A third wave of coronavirus remains a concern in South Korea as the country reports more daily cases. We've seen growing numbers of cancellations recently as people refrain more from going outside, Park said. I'm John Russell.
Japanese researchers say they are working to build the world's first satellite made of wood. The goal is to help fight the problem of space junk. Space junk includes things like dead satellites, lost pieces of equipment, and small pieces of paint. Such objects can present threats to spacecraft and satellites operating in space. The project is a joint effort involving the company Sumitomo Forestry and Japan's Kyoto University. The development team recently announced plans for the satellite in a news release. The researchers say the wooden satellite, which they call Lignosat, is one of several planned projects that seek to explore how wood might be used in space in the future. The developers say wood offers several advantages over other materials commonly used to build satellites, such as aluminum and other metals. For example, the researchers say wood does not block electromagnetic waves. For this reason, wooden structures could be used to house antenna equipment and other controlling devices, the team said in a statement. Wooden structures would also be simpler to design and weigh less than current satellite equipment, the researchers added. Such satellites would be better for the environment because they would burn up when re-entering Earth's atmosphere. They would not release polluting particles into the air and oceans. The researchers say space junk is a growing problem. Thousands of non-operating satellites are currently orbiting the Earth, and the number of new satellites continues to grow. Last year, European and United Nations agencies announced they were developing a plan for worldwide action to deal with space junk. The agencies said waste orbiting the Earth must be cleaned up to make room for new satellites. One of the leaders of the project is Japanese astronaut Takao Doi, who is also a professor at Kyoto University. He told BBC News that the driving force behind the project is the need to limit pollutants released from satellites that remain in the upper atmosphere for many years. Eventually, it will affect the environment of the Earth, Doi said. He added that after the first steps in the research process are completed, the team will begin developing the engineering model of the satellite. After that, a satellite flight model will be manufactured. The first wooden satellite could be launched by 2023. The researchers admit that the project presents some big technological problems. These include finding a wood material that can keep its shape in severe temperatures and survive intense sunlight over a long period of time. The Japanese project involves researching different wood-based materials and protective coatings that can hold up in the extreme conditions of space. The team is studying the construction of wooden structures using cedar and birch wood. The researchers also plan to study how other wood products would perform in space. They want to find out whether trees could help humans in extreme environments such as space stations. The company backing the project, Sumitomo Forestry, has also developed buildings made mainly of wood. In 2018, the company announced its largest project, a 350-meter wooden skyscraper to be built in Tokyo. It says the goal is to complete the building by 2041. I'm Brian Lynn.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. A new leader stood before the American people on March 4, 1913. He was Woodrow Wilson, the 28th President of the United States. Wilson belonged to the Democratic Party. He was progressive in his belief that government should take an active part in efforts for social reforms. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe begin the story of Wilson's presidency.
Woodrow Wilson had spent most of his life at Princeton University. First, he was a professor. Then, he was university president. Next, Wilson was elected governor of the state of New Jersey. His early success as governor made him a leading candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1912. Wilson traveled widely around the country during the campaign. He made speeches to many groups. He tried to make himself and his ideas known to as many Americans as possible.
Wilson called his program the New Freedom. One of his campaign promises was to fight for better conditions for America's small business owners. Such proposals helped him win the Democratic nomination for president. Then he defeated President William Howard Taft and former President Theodore Roosevelt in the election. Woodrow Wilson, the former president of a university, had become the president of a nation. The largest crowd in Washington, D.C.'s history welcomed Wilson outside the Capitol building on the day of his inauguration. He called on the American people to join him in making the country a better place. "Our duty," Wilson said, "is to correct the evil without hurting the good. I call all honest men, all patriotic, all forward-looking men to my side.
Wilson wasted no time. He immediately called a special session of Congress to act on Democratic campaign promises to reduce import taxes or tariffs. Wilson felt strongly about the need to reform these taxes. He broke tradition by leaving the White House to appear before Congress in person to appeal for his tariff proposals. Many members of Congress opposed Wilson's plans. But the new president used the results of a Senate investigation to win the fight. The investigation showed that a number of senators owned companies that depended on high tariffs for their profits. The votes of these senators were influenced by their property holdings. Public knowledge of the situation forced many of them to give up their holdings and stop resisting tariff reform. Congress finally approved Wilson's proposals.
Lower tariffs reduced the amount of money taken in by the federal government. So the Senate also approved a tax on income or earnings. A constitutional amendment had been passed earlier to permit such a tax. President Wilson and the Democratic Party were pleased with the new tariff and income tax bills, but they were far from finished. Next, they turned their efforts to reform of the banking industry. For several years, many people had recognized the need for changes in the banking system. The old system of uncontrolled private banks had developed years earlier, before the United States became a major industrial nation. Many people agreed that a more modern system was needed, but they could not agree on details.
President Wilson said control of the nation's wealth was held by too few men. He noted a report that said just two men controlled 10% of the total wealth of the United States. Wilson said the nation needed a money supply that could be increased or reduced when necessary to correct economic conditions. He said a method was needed to let banks help each other during economic emergencies. And, he said, laws were needed to prevent a few wealthy men from using the economic resources of the country for their own purposes. Finally, Wilson said the control of this system of banking must be public, not private. It must belong to the government itself.
Wilson called his proposal for a central bank the Federal Reserve System. Under the plan, the nation would be divided into 12 areas. Each area would have its own Federal Reserve Bank. These area banks would not do business with the public. They would serve only as bankers' banks, and they would issue a new form of money supported by the federal government. Most important, the leaders of the new system would be chosen by the government, not by private business.
Bankers, business leaders, and their representatives in Congress sharply criticized President Wilson's proposals. They said government control of the banking system was socialism, not capitalism. But Wilson refused to change his proposals, and he helped to lead the fight to make them law. Finally, Congress agreed. It did not take long for bankers to discover that the new system was much better than the old one. Today, the Federal Reserve System is one of the most important institutions in the United States.
For Woodrow Wilson, the fight over the banking system was yet another political success. He had won major reforms in the nation's tariffs, taxes, and banking systems. Now, he told Congress, that new legislation was needed to control the power of monopolies and trusts. These were the giant companies and business alliances that controlled complete industries. Wilson proposed a new antitrust law to control the actions of large companies. His supporters in Congress wrote a bill that listed a number of business activities that no longer would be permitted. For example, no longer could a company set prices that would reduce competition or create a monopoly. No longer could corporations buy stocks of competing companies. No longer could they demand that a store refuse to sell competing products. The new bill also protected labor unions from being charged with antitrust violations. It gave unions more power to organize and protect workers.
At President Wilson's request, Congress also prepared a law that set up a government agency called the Federal Trade Commission. The commission was given the job of investigating wrongdoing in business. It had the power to force companies to obey the new antitrust laws and other rules. Both the antitrust law and the Federal Trade Commission helped protect small business owners from the power of business giants. Once again, the proposals caused fierce debate. But once again, Congress finally voted to give Wilson most of what he wanted.
The early months of Wilson's term were one of the most successful times in the history of any president. The new president had won the election by promising major reforms in the economic life of the country. And he had kept that promise. The reforms were not only a victory for Woodrow Wilson, they also changed the face of American business and economics for many years to come. The income tax, for example, grew to become the federal government's main source of money.
Woodrow Wilson had taught history in the days when he was a professor at Princeton University. He knew his actions as president could influence the country for a long time. But as a historian, he also knew his own term in the White House could be changed by unexpected events. That is just what happened. Wilson campaigned for president mainly on national issues, but he soon was forced to spend more and more time on international issues. His first big problem was across the United States southern border in Mexico.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.